For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, among other reasons, so that we can keep in touch if we get deplatformed by some social media giant, as you should also support our work so we don't get deplatformed by the bank. We hope you'll even do it if you live in Vietnam, which is number 47 on our list of all-time views by country, even though they still have a communist government given to harsh censorship. So if you're in Vietnam, keep watching, but draw the curtains. Now, here are some things that should not keep going. First, winter, which was still raging in much of the Northern Hemisphere at the time of the writing of that newsletter. And journalist activists still claiming stuff like that in the United States, quote, severe storms threaten millions with generational flooding, end quote. Now, generational, obviously, means that such things are expected roughly once a generation, not that they are unprecedented, let alone clearly caused by people. Unless you're a climate zealot, in which case, drumroll please. Quote, as Heatmap's Jiva Lang has reported, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is highly confident in the attributable influence of climate change on extreme rain, end quote. And yes, they're right that she reported it. But that doesn't make it true. In fact, the latest IPCC assessment report number 6 has the famous summary table number 12 in Working Group 1, Chapter 12, listing in three columns how certain they are that various types of extreme weather changes attributable to greenhouse gases have, respectively, already been seen, will be seen by 2050, and will be seen by 2100. But even with a big fat IPCC thumb on the scale, namely the absurd RCP 8.5 scenario runs in columns 2 and 3, the category heavy precipitation and fluvial flood is a blank now and through 2050. So where did Heatmap get their fake news? Arrgh! It's World Weather Attribution again, whose torqued pseudoscience we and others have repeatedly exposed, and which is a long way from what the IPCC says, especially in its more responsible working papers, rather than in its own somewhat torqued summaries. Lang also called rain and the IPCC, quote, simple observable physics. Cold air holds less moisture, and warm air holds more. The Clausius-Clapeyron relation tells us that in 1 degree Celsius warmer air, there is 7% more moisture. All that moisture has to go somewhere, so quite literally, when it rains, it pours. Like heat, the relationship between warm air and rainfall is well understood, which is why the IPCC is highly confident in the attributable influence of climate change on extreme rain, end quote. But when someone says simple physics with regard to climate, you should always be on your guard. Including here, because the Clausius-Clapeyron relation is a theoretical one that does not appear to be borne out in the real world with its complex observable physics. In this week's newsletter, we also complain that, along with the collapsing polar vortex, climate journalists are now barely able to write a news commentary without some reference to a climate whiplash or its equivalent. Thus, a Flipboard email peddles an AP story under the heading, quote, a parched Spain has emerged from drought only to face floods. Scientists point to climate change as a factor in why such swings between dryness and downpour are becoming more extreme, end quote. And Euronews Green asks, what is climate whiplash? And promptly answers, quote, new report reveals dangers of flooding and drought in European cities, end quote. As does old report, since flooding and drought have been dangerous since the invention of complaining about the weather. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. Because at the Climate Discussion Nexus, we don't get lavish government money. We're not backed by huge foundations. We're crowdfunded. We're dependent on your one-time or monthly contributions, including now the thanks button on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us, to put out the newsletter, to make these videos, and to keep pushing back against climate alarmist idiocy. I actually think the battle is going quite well, but it's not won yet, so please help us push on to the finish line. Euronews Green peddles the unprecedented. Quote, a new report has revealed how the 100 most populated cities globally are becoming increasingly exposed to flooding and drought. Findings also indicate that almost 1 in 5 of the cities studied are experiencing climate whiplash, defined as intensifying floods and droughts. A similar proportion, 20%, have seen a major switch from one extreme to the other, known as climate hazard flips, end quote. Now, another way of putting it is, Gee, weather changes a lot. As the story adds, quote, around the globe, around 13% of cities are switching to a more extreme wet climate, while the remaining 7% are shifting to a more extreme dry climate, end quote. But if there were no climate change going on, what are the odds that roughly 1 in 6 cities would be going one way on too wet versus too dry, and half as many were going the other way? Or that 4 in 5 cities would be experiencing no change? See, again, weather is variable, unlike climate alarmism. Thus, we also note, when Al Gore tells you in 2006 that the snow on Kilimanjaro will be gone by 2016, and a travel agency invites you to come and revel in the snow in 2025, don't be surprised when people connect the dots and conclude that you're a zealot. Speaking of which, Net Zero Watch alerts us that in Britain, reeling from the disastrous transpartisan lunge for net zero, the hapless Labour administration of two-tier Keir Starmer is about to realign the UK with European Union rules, brush aside Brexit as a vulgar voter error not binding on the political elite, and submerge its sovereignty in the European Court of Justice so as to be unable to change course on climate before actually hitting the rock. Meanwhile in Australia, it's steady as she sinks. Facing a difficult election, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has somehow managed to jettison both the promise of power price cuts that helped him win in 2022 and the implausible promise of simultaneous dramatic progress toward net zero, in this case a 43% emission reduction. So once again, all pain for no gain. Worse, if that's possible, he laid the blame squarely on the same computer modeling that he had previously called, quote, the most comprehensive modeling ever done for any policy by any opposition in Australia's history since Federation, end quote. And yeah, there wasn't a lot of computer modeling back in 1901. But I still have to wonder, is his election slogan addled and unaccountable? Oh, and more from the watermelon bin. Reuters' Sustainable Switch emails, quote, today's focus is on fights over women's reproductive rights in the United States, end quote, plus, quote, a gripping British television drama, Adolescence, end quote. But leaving aside their tendentious take on both, what have either of them got to do with the environment? Meanwhile, from the quit while you're behind file, the Canadian government's embarrassing inability to plant 2 billion trees in a country awash in the things has not led it to admit that it's flubbing even that task, let alone that its competence is in question on many other files as well. As Blacklock's reporter reveals, quote, Cabinet to date has spent more than $250 million on its 2 billion trees program with no deadline yet for completion, says a briefing note by Natural Resources Minister Jonathan Wilkinson's department. It will take several more years to ensure the right conditions, wrote staff, end quote. Naturally, they praise themselves for their ineptitude. Quote, tree planting at this scale takes time and careful planning, said the note, end quote. But what would those right conditions be? The second largest country in the world, with an estimated 300 billion trees in place in what appears to be fertile terrain for them? And of a bewildering variety of biodiverse species already in place to show the way? Or different people in charge? Then, from the shameful clickbait file, quote, 10 regions most at risk from climate change by 2050, end quote. Which regions? Well, figure it out for yourself. Hint, they cover pretty much the entire planet, except where rich white people live. Everywhere is worse than average, except where rich white people live, and women and minorities are hardest hit. Except maybe rich white women. In the newsletter, we also concede that it is easy to despair over the state of democracy, especially if you've never lived under tyranny. But then, to cheer you up, we mention Robert Bryce's observation of an increasing backlash against solar and wind energy projects, in which, quote, lately the rejections and restrictions have been piling up so quickly that it has been difficult to keep track of them all, end quote. See, apparently after the public was offered pie in the sky and then served a mud pie instead, they aren't taking it well. And we must point out that if proponents had been more open with the public about the drawbacks of such projects and more willing to engage with opponents respectfully instead of just steamrolling them, they might well have more credibility today. In the newsletter, we also note with a smirk that apparently, quote, Al Gore is shifting his climate activism abroad, end quote, and say, we don't care. Except in this respect. If he's really worried about the state of climate policy under Donald Trump in the United States, surely he should stay and fight there, not head off to friendlier climes to bask in his faded glory. We also note that the past is a difficult concept, especially to a journalist with a hammer to whom everything is a climate breakdown nail. And the context for that one is that an alert viewer sent us an item from Sky News Australia about melting glaciers in the Swiss Alps that used the re-emergence of things buried 2,000 years ago as proof of unprecedented climate change. Whereas the obvious conclusion is that it must have been at least as warm 2,000 years ago for these things to get buried in an area that has been, quote, iced over since Roman times, end quote, or more exactly since the Dark Ages cooling, but not earlier. As for the opening quote, glaciers in the Swiss Alps are melting faster than ever before, end quote, what possible idea do they have how fast they melted in 500 BC or 14,000 BC or 900 AD? But on climate, you can say just anything. Thinking is harder. In the newsletter, we then proceed to our next Look It Up feature, this one on Great Lakes water levels. In one of our earliest fact-check videos here at CDN, we reviewed countless pronouncements about how global warming means that the Great Lakes would be drying up, or declarations, alternatively, that soaring water levels in the Great Lakes proved global warming. So, 6 years later, we thought we'd check in on the Great Lakes and their water levels to see if the drop, or surge, or whatever climate change is supposed to be doing, has actually happened yet. So, we went back to the NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory to look it up. And we found that, yep, the water is still there, and yep, it still fluctuates just as it always has. Then we presented part two of our look at frank warnings about the reliability of proxy reconstructions of the climatic past. Last week, it was a surprisingly blunt critique of the IPCC's unsurprising attempts to hide the uncertainties in past climate reconstructions. This week, it's a fascinating paper by Scottish and German geoscientists led by David Kemp, who start by noting that people are concerned about contemporary rates of climate change and naturally want to know how they compare to past episodes of climate change. But the problem is that proxies used to capture long-term trends can't capture short-term ones. Even a very long-lived tree, such as a bristlecone pine, might make it to 5,000 years, but certainly not to 10,000, let alone 10 million. So, whatever the strengths or weaknesses of tree ring records, they really tell us very little about pre-Holocene conditions. So, the authors gathered a large group of different proxies together, and then they plotted the rate of change against the time span covered by each record. And they found, as this chart indicates, that basically, the longer the time span, the slower the apparent rate of change. So, the proxies aren't just missing short-term fluctuations, possibly dramatic ones, they're actually hiding them, because the actual rate of warming wasn't different in each case, especially when the two proxies overlapped. Which tells us there's no reason to think that current short-term changes are unusual, or that they say anything about longer-term trends happening simultaneously. And that's a note of scientific humility that we welcome and commend. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, Cucurbita pepo L, or summer squash, which frankly needs no help from CO2 to grow enormous and take over your entire garden, but just in case, in 1991, an experiment where squash was given an extra 600 parts per million of CO2 found that it grew 83% larger. Their archive only records one such experiment, possibly because the giant squash ate the scientists. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know generational from unprecedented.